This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Have a listen to this. Have a listen to this.
Now, that kind of talk this week dragged Australia's share market to
a
two-year low.
There are, of course, complex reasons for that.
He was the big spender. The big spender.
Doing the grocery shopping can take a huge chunk out of the family budget.
And that's finance.
Hello and welcome to Comedian versus Economist. We demystify the world of money and help you get a handle on the bigger picture. My name's Adam and we're joined as always by my little older brother and real life economist, Thomas. Hi, Thomas.
Yeah, g'day, Adam. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you. Thomas, have you joined the Equity Mates community yet? Community.equitymates.com?
I have, yep. I'm on there.
Brilliant.
I rated our show the other day.
Two stars. Thought Adam was terrible. Brilliant. Well, yeah, we'd love it if you jumped on there, signed up to the Equity Mates community. It's all kicking off inside the Equity Mates forums. Lots of good content, lots of chatter going on, so make sure you join in. Side note, we're going on a two-week break after this week, so if you don't hear us for a couple of weeks, that'll be why we didn't record anything. It's not you, it's us. So yeah, we're a couple of weeks off, but of course we're going to be at FinFest October 15th. So we'd love it if you came and said hi there. That's going to be all sorts of fun, I think. But Thomas, a big show coming up as always. So let's get stuck into it. We might not have to wait for King Charles to kick the oxygen habit before we get another 4-day work week. Could they now be happening in Australia? I googled euphemisms for death and kick the oxygen habit was my favourite. Do you want me to read some of the other ones?
Sure. Okay, I get it. Yeah, right.
Checked into the horizontal Hilton, taking a dirt nap, and I think my favourite was no longer counted in the census. Anyway. We push on. It seems the new British government is trying to sneak through a budget without calling it a budget. Has anyone called them budget smugglers yet? I hope so. We'll find out later. And as I said, FinFest happening October 15th. Thomas and I will be there on the main stage hosting a panel talking about investing in 2050. So stick around as you and I learn actually what that means. I'm excited. This is actually just us trying to use time efficiently and doing a podcast while also preparing for a live show. So welcome behind the curtain. But first, Thomas, big week for central banks last week. What's happening in the world of central banking?
Yeah, it's just a hike-a-thon, hike-a-rama, hike festival happening.
First we had FinFest, then we've got HikeFest.
Yeah. Now, all the big banks everywhere. Last week was a particularly big week, had a lot of banks hiking. Yeah, and it's a fascinating time. Like, I don't know that we've ever seen such a coordinated push and such an aggressive push happening all at once. So it's pretty radical. Like, I guess I want to stress that point. Like, if it feels like this is unusual, it is. Like, it's not kind of normal for all banks to be hiking like they are right now. So like last week, the Fed in the US hiked 75 basis points. So in March this year, interest rates in the US were a flat zero. They're now at 3%. So that's 300 basis points in about 4 months. And that's the fastest jump in rates in over 40 years.
Wow.
So they're scorching along.
Is it the amount of hikes or the speed of the hikes that we're all freaking out about?
I think it's the speed. Like that's what's unusual. Like 300 basis points over the course of a cycle is run of the mill.
It's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But normally you're talking like 2 or 3 years, not 2 or 3 months.
Right.
Yeah, it's a real sort of whipsawing that's happening. It's which is sort of, that in itself is sort of a, is a bit unpredictable. Throw something in the mix, it's just a bit like, I don't know. We don't know how markets and the economies react to such a rapid shift from aggressive cuts to aggressive hikes.
So the US Fed are hiking, and who else?
Britain? Well, UK, yeah. Europe? Yeah, UK is up 50 basis points last week. The other thing about the Bank of England, they gave us some forecasts as well, and now it's saying they're expecting to drop into a second net quarter of negative economic growth. So they're in recession.
Right.
Yeah, what the Bank of England reckons.
Okay.
But they're in recession, and inflation is growing at 9.9%. Just a fraction under double digits.
But the US is also in recession, isn't it? They said they were in a technical recession, so... Is it a technical recession in Great Britain as well?
Technically it is, yes. Well, yeah, right.
No. I guess a recession, I'm going to tie myself in knots here, but a recession always has to be a technical recession, but a technical recession doesn't necessarily have to be a recession.
A recession has, well, it depends who you're asking. Like, an economist has a strict definition of it. A politician is a bit like, well, yeah, technically it's a recession, but...
Right, yeah. And sometimes it's the recession we had to have. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool. So everyone's on board. Everyone's liking.
Sweden jumped up. Sweden locked on 100 basis points. Biggest hike in 30 years. Inflation's also at 9% there.
Is there a record? Like, I'm a big fan of sports, isn't
it? Yeah, I think 100.
Is there a record for biggest hike?
Biggest hike. That's an interesting one. I don't know. I think it's probably 100 basis points. This cycle, Sweden and Canada have that title. Canada hiked 100 basis points as well. Yeah. Right. But, yeah, I don't know of all time of all the world. That's an interesting question.
That's what we're after, Thomas. We want records here on the show. So I guess the big question is, what's the RBA going to do? Is the RBA going to, we're going to start seeing 100 basis points here anytime soon?
Well, I don't think so. But I think definitely the expectation that the next hike might be 25 basis points is now has been blown out of the water. So markets are locking in 50 basis points at the next meeting. The other interesting thing that happened during the week is that Westpac's chief economist, Bill Evans, lifted his interest rate predictions and now saying he's expecting a terminal rate of 3.6%. So he's saying we'll get 50 bips next month on the 4th of October to take us to 2.85%, but the RBA will keep going and will peak out at 3.6% in February 2023.
Phil Lowe said it's not going to happen until February 2025, though.
Yes.
So, well, I don't know. I guess we'll see.
Yeah. History will judge.
Well, what does that mean? What does that mean to us mere mortals?
Well, so like, if that's true, that would imply a discount variable mortgage rate topping out at 6.95%, so around 7%. Ooh. Yeah, that's a little ugly. The interesting thing, that's double what it was in April when the RBA first hiked. So we're talking about a doubling of the variable mortgage rate in this cycle. So that's pretty aggressive, and in a very short time. That'd take mortgage rates to the highest rate since October 2011. And average mortgage repayments would be 48% higher, which would add $1,080 to mortgage of $500,000 on variable rates.
Wow.
So $1,000 a month is, you're going to feel
that's crazy. And with inflation too. So households are trying to deal with inflation at the same time as they're getting rate hikes. Is that all? That's also unusual, yeah?
No. We normally hike into inflation, but like the level of inflation that we've got right now is unusual. We don't, you know, it's been a long while since we've had inflation in the sevens and eights.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's like, yeah, it's households are going to feel that one for sure. That's on a $500,000 mortgage. There's a lot of people with mortgages a lot more than that. So you're looking at, you know, over $1,000 a month extra just disappearing.
Yeah, wow. I hope if any businesses out there looking to sponsor a podcast, just letting you know. Could do with some extra coin. So what if we look a bit past the terminal rate, because that's the top, right? We've scaled the mountain. We've hiked, dare I say, to the top of the mountain. What happens after the rates top out? Like, do we Is that it? Does it sit there for a while? Does it start declining again? What goes on then?
Well, yeah, I mean, technically it can do two things. It can either stay there or it can go down once it's reached the technical top.
You might be familiar with mountains. Once you reach the top, you can either have a sit down or you can start going back down the mountain.
Yeah. I mean, but that's what's interesting. So it's like we're talking.
Will we know what's the top when we get there? Or?
No. You only ever know in hindsight. Yeah. But what's interesting is that you know, Evans is saying that the top's in February next year. So that's not very far away.
Yeah.
And probably the vibe is that the whole world will follow the UK and the US into recession because you've got inflation running hard and you've got, you know, big hits to sort of mortgage payments with rising interest rates, and that'll slow things down quite sharply. Like CBA, I think, was even saying that, you know, they'll probably start cutting sometime next year. So rates will peak out, but then once, and hopefully that quashes inflation, but then once you've done that, then you've probably got a recession, and so you need to start cutting rates to get yourself out of recession.
Right. So this is the sort of soft landing that they're talking about, like trying to kind of not go too far through the recession floor. Is that what we're saying? So
yeah,
they need to get us into a bit of a recession, but not something so deep that it takes us 20 years to get out of it.
Yeah. That's right. That's the ideal scenario.
Mm.
Just enough recession to knock inflation on the head.
But they can't say that, can they? I'd love it if they did, if like Fed Chair Powell was out there going, we're just going to have a little bit of recession. That's what we need here. We're just a little touch, a little taster.
Recessionette.
All right, Thomas, so we've talked about a four-day work week trial before in the UK, but now it's coming to Australia, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So we last time we checked in with this in June, I think it was, the UK was launching a four-day work week trial with 70 companies run by a not-for-profit called 4-Day Week Global, and they've come here. So they're launching a pilot study here in Australia, 6 months long. So far, they've got 20 companies involved in Australia and New Zealand.
Is this like one of those opt-in kind of tissue sample type things where you could submit something? Like, if they're looking for volunteers, that's all I'm saying. If they're looking for volunteers, more than happy to take part in the trial.
Yeah,
as I'm sure a lot of Australians would be.
Well, no. Well, your company needs to do it. So. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you could just call in on Friday. Sorry, I'm part of this trial. I won't be in.
Well, my company offered special leave for COVID, as like to get your COVID vaccinations and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering maybe I might approach them and see if I can get some special leave sorted out to take part in a 4-day work week trial.
I think they really want the whole organisation to be taking part because one of the things they're most interested in is whether productivity falls or whether if companies produce less because their staff are working less. So that's the big question. So it kind of needs to be at the company level to get those results.
Right.
Yeah. And, I mean, interestingly, that seems to be the case. I mean, they're talking it up, but they got Dennis Moriarty, who's a founder of a tech company called Our Community. He said he's never seen productivity higher among staff. Work is just so much better. They do more work in 4 days. They come in more energized and they're more committed. Yeah. So he's talking it up. They also released mid-study results from the UK sample. So they did a survey there. They said that in the survey, 88% said the new schedule was working well for business, and 86% said they'd be likely or extremely likely to consider keeping a 4-day work week after the pilot in. So that's pretty good.
Customers said they missed being served on Wednesdays, but
yeah.
I mean, that'd be the rub, wouldn't it? Imagine if your company went to a 4-day work week, and they were like, "But we're going to make the day off Thursday."
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it wasn't like continuous days of like four days of work and then you got a 3-day weekend. If it was, all right, we're going to make a 4-day work week, but you can choose. It's either Tuesday or Thursday. So just to make sure that no one got a long weekend every weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess they've workshopped that. Yeah. Factored it into the plans.
But yeah, yeah.
If you want to piss people off, that's what you do. That's what I'm saying. I've never been like, I've always been grateful for a public holiday, but the Queen Memorial public holiday on a Thursday. Mm. And I know there's a lot of people in Victoria who just loved it because they had a public holiday for the grand final on Friday, so they got a four day weekend. But a public holiday on a Thursday was just kind of annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the day off, obviously, but yeah, it was like, oh, I don't know where I was.
But I think your companies need to sort of adjust their schedules and maybe it's not just everyone takes a day off, you just sort of roll it around or.
Mm.
But the interesting, so the companies, they're reporting, say 46% said productivity was around the same level, 34% said it improved slightly, and 15% said it improved significantly. So almost none of the companies in the survey were saying that productivity had fallen.
Mm.
That said, they only got response from 41 of the 70 companies involved, and the other companies said that they just couldn't get back to them because there was no one in the office.
Because no one in the office, yeah, brilliant.
So, like, it's a little like it's not a fully representative sample, but it seems to make sense.
It's encouraging.
It's definitely encouraging. Yeah, yeah, definitely the respondents.
Because I mean, the obvious response when they proposed the idea was, yeah, right. So the fact they've got it this far and it feels like it's starting to get some traction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's getting good coverage.
How long do you reckon it might take? If like, is this an our lifetime thing? Or our working lifetime? Or is this more like our kids are going to be maybe benefiting from a four-day work week?
Yeah, I don't know. It's pretty substantial change. I mean, and if anything, like over the last 20, 30 years, the work week's been expanding, not contracting, particularly in sort of the private sector in some places that work hours are sort of going the other way. So it's, yeah. It would take a big
Some people would be happy to go back to a six-day work week.
Yeah. Yeah, you're talking about some pretty massive cultural shifts.
Mm.
I think what they're hoping to prove here is that you can drop that day and it doesn't make any difference.
It's a minefield because no one wants to, like, you know, if you dropped a day and it didn't make any difference, then there's a reasonable question to ask, what were you doing on that day every week? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like you need to balance the narrative so that it doesn't ever make it seem like you were just slacking off for a day out of a week.
There's a reality there as well. Like 5 days, I haven't worked 5 days in a while, but I remember what it was like. It's brutal. Like you can't live and do all the things you're supposed to do. And like when the 5 day work week came in and the 40-hour week, like it was in an era when there was a primary breadwinner and then someone managing the home.
Mm.
And now we've got two people working 5 days a week in your average household, and all of that sort of domestic stuff needs to get taken care of in your sort of leisure hours.
And you can't even buy bread, let alone win it.
Yeah.
Inflation the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got it on a lottery system at my IGA.
Just saving up enough money for the bread raffle. if we work really hard, we can get tickets in the bread raffle. That's living. Welcome to life. All right, why don't we take a break there? We'll grab a word from this week's sponsor. We'll be back with more Comedian versus Economist right after this. Welcome back. You're on Comedian versus Economist. Don't forget to check out community.equitymates.com for all the goings on within the Equity Mates Media Network. You'll find a forum, a chat room there for our show as well as all the other shows across Equity Mates Media, as well as a great community of people and investors just like you. So go and join today, community.equitymates.com. But Thomas.
Mm.
Britain has had a mini budget, is that right?
Yeah.
What have they done over there?
Fiscal event or something.
Fiscal event.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got a new government in the UK, or a new prime minister in Liz Truss, and then a new UK chancellor.
In Truss we trust.
Yes.
Thanks. Thanks for not laughing even politely.
But yeah, the Chancellor is the equivalent of the Treasurer. Kwasi Kwarteng came out and made some big announcements and effectively a budget in all but name.
Right.
And announced effectively the biggest tax cut package in 50 years.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, not so much as it turns out.
No?
No, people didn't love it. In fact, nobody loved it. It's kind of
nobody.
It's nobody.
Not even the taxpayers.
No. Well, maybe some did, but it's quite hard to find friends. Mm. Yeah, this it has no friends. So it's massive. Right. So it's a huge plan, this big spending, big tax cuts. So there's $60 billion for help households with their energy bills and businesses.
Because they were putting a cap, right, on energy,
yeah,
on energy costs.
Doing,
they were putting, I think, £2,000 a year or something.
Yeah, well, something like that. Yeah, so that's going to cost them $60 billion to help households out with that one.
Yeah.
But that's a temporary one-off measure. But then you had a whole bunch of permanent tax cuts. So the basic rate of income tax will be cut to 19% from 20%. Not massive, but a cut. Mm. The corporation tax was set to rise to 25% from 19%. That was Boris Johnson came up with that one. They're right. Like, nope, that's not happening, which will leave businesses with the lowest tax rate in the G20.
I thought we were moving towards a universal tax rate, a global tax floor.
Yeah, but that's in the 12s or something, I think.
Oh, right.
Yeah. God, it's pretty low.
A long way to go, haven't we?
Yeah. Taxes on those who earn over £150,000 will be reduced to 40% from 45%.
Wow.
So that's your high income earners. There's an end to caps on banker bonuses. And they're going to cut stamp duty and, all up 2% of GDP. So a massive, you've got to go back to 1972 to have a tax cut package bigger than this one.
It sounds like the rich doing fairly well out of this one.
It's almost entirely focused on the well-off. Like I saw one study, one estimate saying that 90% of the benefits go to the top 5% of income earners in the UK. Yeah, it's incredibly tilted towards the wealthy, which is kind of staggering in a cost of living crisis that they've come out with this. Like it's a little bit tone deaf. It's one of the reactions to it. People are quite shocked by it. The Economist magazine, which is obviously a hotbed of radical lefties.
Oh, I can never get a copy at my newsagent. It is sold out the moment it hits the shelves.
Yeah, but they're saying Britain's Chancellor offers up a reckless budget fiscally and politically. AFR went with the headline, "Why Investors Hate the UK PM's Biggest Tax Cuts in Decades." Mm. Dr. Doom, Noriel Rubini, we've talked about him on the show before.
Yeah.
He tweeted, "UK is starting to be priced like an emerging market, back to the 1970s, stagflation and eventually the need to go and beg the IMF for a bailout. Truss and her cabinet are clueless. Palm face emoji, shrug emoji, shrug emoji, palm face emoji."
He sounded really credible up until the palm face emoji, shrug emoji.
Yeah.
Right. Classic Doom. He's really hip. Yeah. He's hip with the kids in the Economist magazine.
Yeah, he knows how to work the socials. Yeah, so but these aren't like the Economist magazine. Like this is a magazine that's normally going to be cheering for tax cuts, not having it at all. Markets hated it. Like so, bond yield spiked, the biggest one day move since 1991. So the idea is that they're going to have to pay for this somehow. They're increasing spending at the same time they're cutting taxes and cutting government revenue. That implies more debt. And so markets hated that. So the biggest one-day jump in yields since 1991. The pound collapsed. So the pound dropped 3.6% against the US dollar. That's the sixth biggest one-day fall on record.
Yeah,
and the only one in the top 10 biggest falls of all time to come in reaction to a budget announcement like this.
Right. Is the Chancellor kind of like reviewing it now and just going, "Phew, thank God I didn't make that the actual budget. I'm going to..."
No.
We're going to revise this.
No, he's doubled down on it. He sort of
really?
Yeah. He said expect more tax cuts, basically.
Wow.
Yeah. So even though...
I mean, the question of paying for it's an interesting one. because we've just come out of a period where it seemed like anything we needed to pay for in terms of COVID, we just printed money to do so. So, but now they're saying, well, if you want to pay for this, we're going to have to go into debt and borrow money. And stuff. Like, can they not? Like, what happens if they just print money to get out of it?
This is the interesting thing, is that the Bank of England's has gone into quantitative tightening.
Right.
So they're tightening to the tune of £80 billion a year. That involves them selling government debt. So they're not buying government debt. Quantitative tightening is the opposite of money printing.
Right.
You can't print at the same time that you're tightening.
Yeah, yeah.
You would need the Bank of England to change course. The Bank of England's not going to change course because inflation's running at 9.9% and they're trying to get on top of inflation. That's not an option in this case. So that's why markets are saying, well, they're necessarily going to go to debt markets to get this money. And, yeah,
right.
debt markets don't really want a bar of it, it seems.
Mm.
Yeah, so there's sort of three problems with it and why it doesn't have any friends. The first is that it's at odds with monetary policy. So the Bank of England's trying to get on top of interest rates, trying to get on top of inflation by slowing the economy. Tax cuts do the opposite. They speed up the economy to some extent.
Mm.
So, yeah, so it's sort of like it's seen as like a bit of like they're working against the Bank of England. So
is it the same sort of relationship that the Australian government has with the RBA, like the Bank of England is an independent entity or whatever it's called?
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, has statutory independence. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're copping criticism for that. The second problem is they're calling it a growth plan, but very few measures really do anything to improve growth. So the cutting the tax rate for your highest income earners, we kind of know that does nothing because high income earners, just if they get a tax cut, they just tend to pocket it. They don't have a high marginal propensity to consume, which means if you give a low income earner a tax cut, they tend to spend a good chunk of that money that they get, which then circulates through the economy and gives things a buzz. High income earners tend not to do that. So cutting taxes for them doesn't really... It's not where you're going to get bang for buck. Cutting stamp duty, similarly, that increases the price of houses in a competitive housing market. Cutting stamp duty just frees up cash, which then just goes into the prices. So it doesn't really put money in people's pocket. It just increases house prices. Scrapping the plan to increase the company tax rate, that doesn't do anything because it hadn't happened anyway. So there's nothing there, even though they're calling it a growth plan, there's nothing in there that's really going to help with growth, which means that you're sort of saddling yourself with more debt while doing nothing to potentially help yourself grow out of the problem.
I feel like even I understand what you're saying, which doesn't always happen, but I feel like even I get it and it makes sense. Why is something that seems so obvious, and it sounds to me like the press have reacted the same way, everyone seems to be kind of, it's resonating, people are saying the same things that you are, and so why is something so obviously kind of wrong being put in? Like, why are they doing it? What's the motive? Do we know?
It's very hard to see. It's a really odd one. It's not clear. I mean, sort of the other thing is, like I was saying, there's three problems. The third one is that it's politically odd. People are going this is a pretty stinky plan. Nothing in there is really populist, you know. So you're abolishing the top tax rates for the ultra rich. Great, that's good for them. But
yeah,
you're ending the cap on banker bonuses. Who's in favour of that? Bankers. But, you know, the ordinary people are going to go, what?
The ordinary people who are dealing with, out of control electricity prices.
Yeah, right. So, the first thing, and this is the first thing that the new government has done, 19 days on the job. First thing they're going to, this is what we're doing. We're going to end the cap on banker bonuses. And it's like,
huzzah!
There's crickets. Everyone's like, what?
You're going to do what now? Yeah, right.
For too long, bankers have been downtrodden.
There's just four bankers down in the street holding placards going, finally. Finally someone's doing something about it.
So it seems like a big lurch right, like it's not, they're not popular vote winners. They're expensive in dollar terms. They're expensive politically, and then you know they're not really going to be, no one's going to be cheering for them. So it's really odd. So that's why there's sort of, I haven't really found anyone who's like, I like this. This is
and
good.
What's the outcome then? What happens? What happens from here? When's the next election?
2 years away. 2 years away, right. I think.
So they've got a bit of time.
They've got a little bit of time. But none of those measures are going to make any difference in the next 2 years.
That's the bit that doesn't make any sense to me. It's just bad from every angle you look at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Are they just trying to make a splash? Is it like they're just announcing themselves? Because they've only been there 19 days.
And Liz
Truss is just like, yo, what's up? I'm here. And we're crazy. We're getting crazy up in here. Watch out, what are we doing now? Whoa. And everyone's like, wow, that Liz Truss, you got to watch her.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I mean,
she's like the crazy guy at the party. Like no one's enjoying having him there. But at the same time, everyone's just kind of like, hey, he's kind of interesting, something.
Yeah. Better than the old guy. Well, as it comes after Boris Johnson, he's like,
yeah, true. These are the things you have to do if you want to out crazy Boris Johnson. This is just Liz didn't want to do it. She was like, look, people like crazy, and this is the level we have to take it.
What's it going to take? Oh, I'm going to crash the pound. Yeah. I mean, like, I guess you wonder, like, maybe people don't pay that much attention, and that she's just branding herself as the low tax option, and people go, "Oh, I don't like taxes." Okay, that they're the low tax option, maybe. But then there's that the end of cap on banker bonuses. It's such a It's just such. It seems like such a gift to fat cat bankers. Mm. Like it's so easy to run politics against that. In the middle of a recession, they're going to be in recession and inflation's at double digits. Mm. Like, bankers aren't going to have no sympathy. So, yeah.
We'll be offering free car detailing for any Lamborghini and Ferrari owners. Right, Thomas, finally on the show, FinFest is happening October 15th. You and I are going to be there. We're going to be presenting a panel discussion on investing in 2050. Mm. What are we going to do?
Yeah, so we've got three panelists joining us, very talented investors, and we're going to give them a taste of the future with the headlines that we're getting from BuzzFeed, from 2050 BuzzFeed. And we're going to give them a picture of the tech that's on offer in 2050 and then see how they would invest knowing that that tech's a reality.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you've given me some headlines. Mm. I'm going to read them out to you. You might have to give me a rundown on exactly what we're looking for. Mm. So the first one is, man puts kebab in 3D printed Hadron Collider. You won't believe what happens next. Bit of clickbait too. I like it.
Yeah, yeah.
What's going on there?
Yeah, well, so 3D printing is obviously one of the big trends. That's sort of, we're seeing the emergence of that, but that's going to be off the charts in 2050. Got the democratization of knowledge. So you can just access the plans for a Hadron Collider from the internet. That's sort of in effect already, but that'll sort of, everything will be available to everyone in 2050.
You're suggesting people are going to be printing their own Hadron Colliders?
That's what I'm calling.
Wow. I really won't believe what happens next. Well, then maybe I will through the democratization of knowledge.
But the other thing that's implied there is an abundance of cheap energy. So Hadron Collider is not something you can run on a normal household electricity budget. So somehow we're going to figure out super cheap energy.
There's also some council regulations to work through too, I reckon, before you spin up your own Hadron Collider in your apartment. All right. The second headline is the brutal battle for Cowtown. PETA, PETA activists launched drone strike on orbiting cattle ranch to protest ZG beef.
Words, yeah. So Cowtown is an orbiting O'Neill cylinder. O'Neill cylinders are little structures in space that spin and by spinning create their own gravity.
Do these things exist already?
No, only theoretically.
Oh, okay.
But in 2050, they will exist. One of those O'Neill cylinders has become Cowtown, so it just becomes a cattle ranch. So one of the ideas of the future is that all of our carbon-intensive industries have been off-planeted. This is something that Jeff Bezos was pushing for, talked about a little while ago. So he wants to see Earth zoned residential and light commercial only. And, you know, cows are pretty carbon-intensive. So, yeah, so they're off-planeted. Cows, but ZG beef is zero gravity beef. So some cows are being raised in zero gravity conditions because it increases the marbling. PETA activists say
that have no muscles. There would be no sinewy bits at all. It'd just be like complete fat.
Yeah. So PETA activists say that that's cruel, and they've launched the drone strike. Against it. So the implied technology there is obviously weaponized drones, O'Neill cylinders, and the relocation of heavy industry to space.
And space cows.
Space cows, yeah.
Okay. The next one is Kendall Jenner left her coffee mug on top of her Ferrari Porb. You write porn wrong? Now NASA wants to fine her $15 million to clean up her space junk. What's a porb, first of all?
A porb is a personal orbiter. It's a personal flight craft capable of low orbit flight. The applied technology there is we've got personal flying vehicles. Personal drones, are, you know, they're probably only 5-10 years away, but it's probably a small leap from there into orbiting porbs. But you also got space junk. So once you got everyone launching stuff into space, then you're going to have some pretty hectic space junk, and that's going to create some big stories. And then if we're talking about Kendall Jenner still being on the front pages, then we've got life extension and cosmetic surgery. It's probably leveled up as well by 2050.
The only issue I've got with this headline is people are still drinking coffee. I think that's probably been replaced by Red Bull or some kind of space energy drink. That would be the only addition to that one, I think.
No, coffee's vintage methamphetamines.
All right, finally, way too close. Tesla lasers take out planet killer asteroid. What's happening here?
Yeah, so there was a routine asteroid retrieval. So one of the trends of the future is asteroid mining. There's abundant mineral resources on asteroids out in space, and somehow we're going to be harvesting those resources. That'll either happen through rigs that then set up transport back to Earth, or another idea is that we bounce the asteroids back down into Earth's orbit and mine them there, which opens up.
It's fraught with danger.
Does seem fraught with danger, yeah. But it would be much cheaper than trucks trucking stuff back from the asteroid belt.
Nah, we need Twiggy Forest Infinity Train. I did actually read two asteroid stories this week. The first one was that we're test firing rockets into an asteroid just to see whether we can deviate one off course. Should we need to, should the need arise. But the other one I read today was that a primary school who was organising a science discovery day and trying to promote it by creating a fake asteroid impact zone ended up with freaked out parents and local community because they thought that they'd actually been hit by an asteroid because they cracked the asphalt and had steam coming out of it and it looked like a war zone.
Wow.
So, maybe get your comms people onto that one if you're going to run another science discovery day. Spread the word in the local community that it's just a simulated event and not an actual asteroid strike at your local primary school because that scares people. All right, finally, man creates app for his Bimmy that replaces every human face he sees with the face of his dead wife. I'm crying right now. This is a disturbing headline. What's a Bimmy?
A Bimmy is a brain-machine interface, a programmable hardware upgrade for the brain. So this is tech that's being talked about now, but by 2050 that'll be realized. So we'll be able to hack the brain with hardware. That implies nanotech and surgery, and also implies augmented and virtual reality going to some, the next level. So he'll have a thing in his head that changes every face he sees to the face of his dead wife. Pretty intense. But that kind of augmented reality, like virtual reality, will happen inside your head, not out.
Inside your head.
Not in your glasses.
It's going to make every interaction he has pretty interesting, isn't it?
Like,
just at the bar, that'll be $14,000 for your beer, thanks. Oh, come on, love. We've got so much history. right, well, creates all kinds of interesting thoughts in my head, and I reckon that's actually going to be a lot of fun to hear what future focused investors are going to have to say about it. I think the whole of FinFest is going to be all sorts of fun. It all kicks off October 15th. We hope you'll join us there.
See you all in Sydney if you're there.
Yeah, see you all in Sydney. Absolutely. So yeah, it's going to be great fun. It doesn't really matter what level of investor you are, whether you're just getting started, whether you're a seasoned campaigner. Yeah, there's going to be something for everyone there. There's going to be bars. There's going to be DJs. It's going to be epic. We hope you'll join us there. We thank you for joining us again this week on Comedian versus Economist. Don't forget, we've got a couple of weeks off next week and the one after. I guess we're preparing. No, it's school holidays. So, we look forward to talking to you again next time on Comedian versus Economist. It's bye for now.
Comedian versus Economist is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Comedian versus Economist are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website, where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Comedian vs Economist acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.